Did we not, Sir Golan Treviz, we would be soggy with rain. But how do you do that? Not being a trained engineer, sir, I cannot tell thee. And what might be the name of this island on which you and your people live? Said Treviz, finding himself trapped in the ornate sound of classical galactic, and wondering desperately if he had the conjugations right. Hiroko said, We call our heavenly island in the midst of the vast sea of waters, New Earth. At which Treviz and Pellerat stared at each other with surprise and delight. 76. There was no time to follow up on the statement. Others were arriving. Dozens. They must consist of those, Treviz thought, who were not on the ships or in the fields, and who were not from too far away. They came on foot for the most part, though two ground cars were in evidence, rather old and clumsy. Clearly, this was a low-technology society, and yet they controlled the weather. It was well known that technology was not necessarily all of a piece, that lack of advance in some directions did not necessarily exclude considerable advance in others. But surely this example of uneven development was unusual. Of those who were now watching the ship, at least half were elderly men and women. There were also three or four children. Of the rest, more were women than men. None showed any fear or uncertainty whatever. Treviz said in a low voice to Bliss, Are you manipulating them? They seem serene. I'm not in the least manipulating them, said Bliss. I never touch minds unless I must. It's Phalum I'm concerned with. Few as the newcomers were to anyone who had experienced the crowds of curiosity seekers on any normal world in the galaxy, they were a mob to Phalum, to whom the three adults on the far star had been something to grow accustomed to. Phalum was breathing rapidly and shallowly, and her eyes were half closed. Almost she seemed in shock. Bliss was stroking her, softly and rhythmically, and making soothing sounds. Treviz was certain that she was delicately accompanying it all by an infinitely gentle rearrangement of mental fibrils. Phalum took in a sudden deep breath, almost a gasp, and shook herself in what was perhaps an involuntary shudder. She raised her head and looked at those present with something approaching normality, and then buried her head in the space between Bliss's arm and body. Bliss let her remain so, while her arm, encircling Phalum's shoulder, tightened periodically, as though to indicate her own protective presence over and over. Pellerat seemed rather awestruck as his eyes went from one Alphan to another. He said, Golan, they differ so among themselves. Treviz had noticed that too. There were various shades of skin and hair color, including one brilliant redhead with blue eyes and freckled skin. At least three apparent adults were as short as Hiroko, and one or two were taller than Treviz. A number of both sexes had eyes resembling those of Hiroko, and Treviz remembered that on the teeming commercial planets of the Fili sector, such eyes were characteristic of the population, but he had never visited that sector. All the Elfins wore nothing above the waist, and among the women the breasts all seemed to be small. That was the most nearly uniform of all the bodily characteristics that he could see. Bliss said suddenly, Miss Hiroko, my youngster is not accustomed to travel through space, and she is absorbing more novelty than she can easily manage. Would it be possible for her to sit down and, perhaps, have something to eat and drink? Hiroko looked puzzled, and Pellerat repeated what Bliss had said in the more ornate galactic of the mid-imperial period. Hiroko's hand then flew to her muff, and she sank to her knees gracefully. I crave your pardon, respected madam, she said. I have not thought of this child's needs, nor of thine. The strangeness of this event has too occupied me. Wouldst thou, would you all, as visitors and guests, enter the refectory for morning meal? May we join you and serve as hosts? Bliss said, That is kind of you. She spoke slowly and pronounced the words carefully, hoping to make them easier to understand. It would be better, though, if you alone served as hostess, for the sake of the comfort of the child, who is unaccustomed to being with many people at once. Hiroko rose to her feet. It shall be as thou hast said. She led them in leisurely manner across the grass. Other Alphans edged closer. They seemed particularly interested in the clothing of the newcomers. Trevise removed his light jacket and handed it to a man who had sidled toward him and had laid a questing finger upon it. Here, he said. Look it over, but return it. Then he said to Hiroko, See that I get it back, Miss Hiroko. Of a surety, it will be backhanded, respected sir. She nodded her head gravely. Trevise smiled and walked on. He was more comfortable without the jacket in the light, mild breeze. He had detected no visible weapons on the persons of any of those about him, and he found it interesting that no one seemed to show any fear or discomfort over Trevise's. They did not even show curiosity concerning them. It might well be that they were not aware of the objects as weapons at all. From what Trevise had so far seen, Alpha might well be a world utterly without violence. A woman, having moved rapidly forward so as to be a little ahead of Bliss, turned to examine her blouse minutely, then said, Hast thou breasts, respected madam? And, as though unable to wait for an answer, she placed her hand lightly on Bliss's chest. Bliss smiled and said, As thou hast discovered, I have. They are perhaps not as shapely as thine, but I hide them not for that reason. On my world, it is not fitting that they be uncovered. She whispered in an aside to Pellerat, How do you like the way I'm getting the hang of classical galactic? You did that very well, Bliss, said Pellerat. The dining room was a large one, with long tables to which were attached long benches on either side. Clearly, the Alphans ate community fashion. Trevise felt a pang of conscience. Bliss's request for privacy had reserved this space for 5 people and forced the Alphans generally to remain in exile outside. A number, however, placed themselves at a respectful distance from the windows, which were no more than gaps in the wall, unfilled even by screens, presumably so that they might watch the strangers eat. Involuntarily, he wondered what would happen if it were to rain. Surely the rain would come only when it was needed, light and mild, continuing without significant wind till enough had fallen. Moreover, it would always come at known times so that the Alphans would be ready for it, Trevise imagined. The window he was facing looked out to sea, and far out at the horizon, it seemed to Trevise that he could make out a bank of clouds, similar to those that so nearly filled the skies everywhere but over this little spot of Eden. There were advantages to weather control. Eventually, they were served by a young woman on tiptoeing feet. They were not asked for their choice, but were merely served. There was a small glass of milk, a larger of grape juice, a still larger of water. Each diner received 2 large poached eggs, with slivers of white cheese on the side. Each also had a large platter of broiled fish and small roasted potatoes, resting on cool green lettuce leaves. Bliss looked with dismay at the quantity of food before her, and was clearly at a loss where to begin. Phelim had no such trouble. She drank the grape juice thirstily, and with clear evidence of approval, then chewed away at the fish and potatoes. She was about to use her fingers for the purpose, but Bliss held up a large spoon with tined ends that could serve as a fork as well, and Phalum accepted it. Pellerat smiled his satisfaction and cut into the eggs at once. Trevise said, "Now to be reminded what real eggs taste like," followed suit. Hiroko, forgetting to eat her own breakfast in her delight at the manner in which the others ate, for even Bliss finally began with obvious relish, said at last, "Is it well?" "It is well," said Trevise, his voice somewhat muffled. "This island has no shortage of food, apparently. Or do you serve us more than you should out of politeness?" Hiroko listened with intent eyes and seemed to grasp the meaning, for she said, "No, no, respected sir. Our land is bountiful, our sea even more so. Our ducks give eggs, our goats both cheese and milk, and there are our grains. Above all, our sea is filled with countless varieties of fish in numberless quantity. The whole empire could eat at our tables and consume not the fish of our sea." Trevise smiled discreetly. Clearly, the young elfin had not the smallest idea of the true size of the galaxy. He said, "You call this island New Earth, Hiroko. Where, then, might Old Earth be?" She looked at him in bewilderment. "Old Earth, say you? I crave pardon, respected sir. I take not thy meaning." Trevise said, "Before there was a New Earth, your people must have lived elsewhere. Where was this elsewhere from which they came?" "I know not of that, respected sir," she said with troubled gravity. "This land has been mine all of my life, and my mother's and grandmother's before me, and, I doubt not, their grandmothers and great-grandmothers before them. Of any other land I know not." "But," said Trevise, descending to gentle argumentation, "you speak of this land as New Earth. Why do you call it that?"
"Because, respected sir," she replied, equally gentle, "that is what it is called by all, since the mind of women goeth not to the contrary."
"But it is New Earth, and therefore a later earth. There must be an old earth, a former one for which it was named. Each morning there is a new day, and that implies that earlier there had existed an old day. Don't you see that this must be so?"
"Nay, respected sir, I know only what this land is called. I know of naught else, nor do I follow this reasoning of thine, which sounds very much like what we call here chop logic. I mean no offense."
And Trevise shook his head and felt defeated. 77. Trevise leaned toward Pellerat and whispered, "Wherever we go, whatever we do, we get no information." "We know where Earth is, so what does it matter?" said Pellerat, doing little more than move his lips. "I want to know something about it." "She's very young, scarcely a repository of information." Trevise thought about that, then nodded. "Right, Genoff." He turned to Hiroko and said, "Miss Hiroko, you haven't asked us why we are here in your land." Hiroko's eyes fell, and she said,
"That would be but scant courtesy until you have all eaten and rested, respected sir."
"But we have eaten, or almost so, and we have recently rested, so I shall tell you why we are here. My friend, Dr. Pellerat, is a scholar on our world, a learned man. He is a mythologist. Do you know what that means?"
Nay, respected sir, I do not.
He studies old tales as they are told on different worlds. Old tales are known as myths or legends, and they interest Dr. Pellerat. Are there learned ones on New Earth who know the old tales of this world? Hiroko's forehead creased slightly into a frown of thought. She said,
This is not a matter in which I am myself skilled. We have an old man in these parts who loves to talk of ancient days. Where he may have learned those things, I know not, and methinks he may have spun his notions out of air, or heard them from others who did so spin. This is perhaps the material which thy learned companion would hear, yet I would not mislead thee. It is in my mind.
She looked to right and left as though unwilling to be overheard.
That the old man is but a prater, though many listen willingly to him.
Trevise nodded. Such prating is what we wish. Would it be possible for you to take my friend to this old man?
Monoli, he calls himself.
To Monoli, then. And do you think Monoli would be willing to speak to my friend?
He, willing to speak, said Hiroko scornfully. Thou must ask, rather, if he be ever ready to cease from speaking. He is but a man, and will therefore speak, if allowed, till a fortnight hence, with no pause. I mean no offense, respected sir.
No offense taken. Would you lead my friend to Monoli now?
That may anyone do at any time. The ancient is ever home, and ever ready to greet an ear.
Trevise said, And perhaps an older woman would be willing to come and sit with Madame Bliss. She has the child to care for and cannot move about too much. It would please her to have company, for women, as you know, are fond of...
Prating?
Said Hiroko, clearly amused.
Why, so men say, although I have observed that men are always the greater babblers. Let the men return from their fishing, and one will vie with another in telling greater flights of fancy concerning their catches. None will mark them nor believe, but this will not stop them either. But enough of my prating, too. I will have a friend of my mother's, one whom I can see through the window, stay with Madame Bliss and the child. And before that, she will guide your friend, the respected doctor, to the aged Monoli. If your friend will hear as avidly as Monoli will prate, thou wilt scarcely part them in this life. Wilt thou pardon my absence a moment?
When she had left, Trevise turned to Pellerat and said, Listen, get what you can out of the old man, and Bliss, you find out what you can from whoever stays with you. What you want is anything about Earth.
And you, said Bliss, what will you do?
I will remain with Hiroko and try to find a third source. Bliss smiled.
Ah, yes. Pell will be with this old man, I with an old woman. You will force yourself to remain with this fetchingly unclad young woman. It seems a reasonable division of labor.
As it happens, Bliss, it is reasonable.
But you don't find it depressing that the reasonable division of labor should work out so, I suppose?
No, I don't. Why should I?
Why should you indeed?
Hiroko was back and sat down again.
It is all arranged. The respected Dr. Pellerat will be taken to Monoli, and the respected Madame Bliss, together with her child, will have company. May I be granted, then, respected Sir Trevise, the boon of further conversation with thee, mayhap of this old earth of which thou...
Pratest? Asked Trevise.
Nay, said Hiroko, laughing. But thou dost well to mock me. I showed thee but discourtesy ere now in answering thy question on this matter. I would fain make amends.
Trevise turned to Pellaret. Fain? Be eager, said Pellaret softly. Trevise said, Miss Hiroko, I felt no discourtesy, but if it will make you feel better, I will gladly speak with you.
Kindly spoken, I thank thee, said Hiroko, rising.
Trevise rose too. Bliss, he said, make sure Janoff remains safe. Leave that to me. As for you, you have your... She nodded toward his holsters. I don't think I'll need them, said Trevise uncomfortably. He followed Hiroko out of the dining room. The sun was higher in the sky now, and the temperature was still warmer. There was an otherworldly smell, as always. Trevise remembered it had been faint on Camporeon, a little musty on Aurora, and rather delightful on Solaria. On Melpomenia, they were in spacesuits where one is only aware of the smell of one's own body. In every case, it disappeared in a matter of hours as the osmic centers of the nose grew saturated. Here, on Alpha, the odor was a pleasant grassy fragrance under the warming effect of the sun, and Trevise felt a bit annoyed, knowing that this, too, would soon disappear. They were approaching a small structure that seemed to be built of a pale pink plaster. This, said Hiroko, is my home. It used to belong to my mother's younger sister. She walked in and motioned Trevise to follow. The door was open, or, Trevise noticed as he passed through, it would be more accurate to say there was no door. Trevise said, What do you do when it rains?
We are ready. It will rain 2 days hence, for 3 hours ere dawn, when it is coolest, and when it will moisten the soil most powerfully. Then I have but to draw this curtain, both heavy and water-repellent, across the door.
She did so as she spoke. It seemed made of a strong, canvas-like material.
I will leave it in place now, she went on. All will then know I am within, but not available, for I sleep or am occupied in matters of importance.
It doesn't seem much of a guardian of privacy.
Why should it not be? See, the entrance is covered.
But anyone could shove it aside.
With disregard of the wishes of the occupant?
Hiroko looked shocked.
Are such things done on thy world? It would be barbarous.
Trevise grinned. I only asked. She led him into the second of two rooms, and at her invitation he seated himself in a padded chair. There was something claustrophobic about the blockish smallness and emptiness of the rooms, but the house seemed designed for little more than seclusion and rest. The window openings were small and near the ceiling, but there were dull mirror strips in a careful pattern along the walls, which reflected light diffusely. There were slits in the floor from which a gentle, cool breeze uplifted. Trevise saw no signs of artificial lighting, and wondered if Alphons had to wake at sunrise and go to bed at sunset. He was about to ask, but Hiroko spoke first, saying,
Is Madame Bliss thy woman companion?
Trevise said cautiously, Do you mean by that, is she my sexual partner? Hiroko colored.
I pray thee, have regard for the decencies of polite conversation, but I do mean private pleasantry.
No. She is the woman companion of my learned friend.
But thou art the younger and the more goodly.
Well, thank you for your opinion, but it is not Bliss's opinion. She likes Dr. Pellaret much more than she does me.
That much surprises me. Will he not share?
I have not asked him whether he would, but I'm sure he wouldn't, nor would I want him to. Hiroko nodded her head wisely.
I know. It is her fundament.
Her fundament?
Thou knowest this.
And she slapped her own dainty rear end.
Oh, that. I understand you. Yes, bliss is generously proportioned in her pelvic anatomy.
He made a curving gesture with his hands and winked, and Hiroko laughed. Trevise said, Nevertheless, a great many men enjoy that kind of generosity of figure.
I cannot believe so. Surely it would be a sort of gluttony to wish excess of that which is pleasant in moderation. Wouldst thou think more of me if my breasts were massive and dangling, with nipples pointing to toes? I have, in good sooth, seen such, yet have I not seen men flock to them. The poor women so afflicted must needs cover their monstrosities, as Madame Bliss does.
Such oversize wouldn't attract me either, though I am sure that Bliss doesn't cover her breasts for any imperfection they may have.
Thou dost not, then, disapprove of my visage or form?
I would be a madman to do so. You are beautiful.
And what dost thou for pleasantries on this ship of thine, as thou flittest from one world to the next, Madame Bliss being denied thee?
Nothing, Hiroko. There's nothing to do. I think of pleasantries on occasion, and that has its discomforts. But we who travel through space know well that there are times when we must do without. We make up for it at other times.
If it be a discomfort, how may that be removed?
I experience considerably more discomfort since you've brought up the subject. I don't think it would be polite to suggest how I might be comforted.
Would it be discourtesy were I to suggest a way?
It would depend entirely on the nature of the suggestion.
I would suggest that we be pleasant with each other.
Did you bring me here, Hiroko, that it might come to this? Hiroko said with a pleased smile.
Yes, it would be both my hostess' duty of courtesy, and it would be my wish, too.
If that's the case, I will admit it is my wish, too. In fact, I would like very much to oblige you in this. I would be, fain to do thee pleasure.
Chapter 18, The Music Festival. 78.
Lunch was in the same dining room in which they had had breakfast. It was full of Alphans, and with them were Trevise and Pellerat, made thoroughly welcome. Bliss and Phalum ate separately, and more or less privately, in a small annex. There were several varieties of fish, together with soup in which there were strips of what might well have been boiled kid. Loaves of bread were there for the slicing, butter and jam for the spreading. A salad, large and diffuse, came afterward, and there was a notable absence of any dessert, although fruit juices were passed about in apparently inexhaustible pitchers. Both foundationers were forced to be abstemious after their heavy breakfast, but everyone else seemed to eat freely.
"How do they keep from getting fat?" wondered Pellerat in a low voice.
Trevise shrugged. "Lots of physical labor, perhaps." It was clearly a society in which decorum at meals was not greatly valued. There was a miscellaneous hubbub of shouting, laughing, and thumping on the table with thick, obviously unbreakable cups. Women were as loud and raucous as men, albeit in higher pitch. Pellerat winced, but Trevise, who now, temporarily at least,
felt no trace of the discomfort he had spoken of to Hiroko, felt both relaxed and good-natured. He said, "Actually, it has its pleasant side. These are people who appear to enjoy life and who have few, if any, cares. Weather is what they make it, and food is unimaginably plentiful. This is a golden age for them that simply continues and continues." He had to shout to make himself heard, and Pelerat shouted back, "But it's so noisy." "They're used to it." "I don't see how they can understand each other in this riot." Certainly it was all lost on the two foundationers. The queer pronunciation and the archaic grammar and word order of the Alphan language made it impossible to understand at the intense sound levels. To the foundationers, it was like listening to the sounds of a zoo in fright. It was not till after lunch that they rejoined Bliss in a small structure, which Trevise found to be rather inconsiderably different from Hiroko's quarters, and which had been assigned them as their own temporary living quarters. Phelim was in the second room, enormously relieved to be alone, according to Bliss, and attempting to nap. Pelerat looked at the door gap in the wall and said uncertainly, "There's very little privacy here. How can we speak freely?" "I assure you," said Trevise, "that once we pull the canvas barrier across the door, we won't be disturbed. The canvas makes it impenetrable by all the force of social custom." Pelerat glanced at the high open windows. "We can be overheard." "We need not shout. The Alphans won't eavesdrop. Even when they stood outside the windows of the dining room at breakfast, they remained at a respectful distance." Bliss smiled. "You've learned so much about Alphan customs in the time you spent alone with gentle little Hiroko, and you've gained such confidence in their respect for privacy. What happened?" Trevise said, "If you're aware that the tendrils of my mind have undergone a change for the better and can guess the reason, I can only ask you to leave my mind alone." "You know very well that Gaia will not touch your mind under any circumstances short of life crisis, and you know why. Still, I'm not mentally blind. I could sense what happened a kilometer away. Is this your invariable custom on space voyages, my erotomaniac friend?" "Erotomaniac? Come, Bliss. Twice on this entire trip. Twice." "We were only on two worlds that had functioning human females on them. Two out of two. And we had only been a few hours on each." "You are well aware I had no choice on Camporeon." "That makes sense. I remember what she looked like." For a few moments, Bliss dissolved in laughter. Then she said, "Yet I don't think Hiroko held you helpless in her mighty grip or inflicted her irresistible will on your cringing body." "Of course not. I was perfectly willing. But it was her suggestion just the same." Pelerat said, with just a tinge of envy in his voice, "Does this happen to you all the time, Golan?" "Of course it must, pal," said Bliss. "Women are helplessly drawn to him."
"I wish that were so," said Trevise, "but it isn't. And I'm glad it isn't. I do have other things I want to do in life. Just the same, in this case I was irresistible. After all, we were the first people from another world that Hiroko had ever seen, or, apparently, that anyone now alive on Alpha had ever seen. I gathered from things she let slip, casual remarks, that she had the rather exciting notion that I might be different from Alphans, either anatomically or in my technique. Poor thing, I'm afraid she was disappointed."
"Oh," said Bliss. "Were you?"
"No," said Trevise.
I have been on a number of worlds, and I have had my experiences. And what I had discovered is that people are people, and sex is sex wherever one goes. If there are noticeable differences, they are usually both trivial and unpleasant. The perfumes I've encountered in my time. I remember when a young woman simply couldn't manage unless there was music loudly played. Music that consisted of a desperate screeching sound. So she played the music, and then I couldn't manage. I assure you, if it's the same old thing, then I'm satisfied.
Speaking of music, said Bliss, we are invited to a musicale after dinner. A very formal thing, apparently, that is being held in our honor. I gather the Alphans are very proud of their music.
Trevise grimaced. Their pride will in no way make the music sound better to our ears.
Hear me out, said Bliss. I gather that their pride is that they play expertly on very archaic instruments. Very archaic. We may get some information about Earth by way of them.
Trevise's eyebrows shot up. An interesting thought. And that reminds me that both of you may already have information. Janoff, did you see this Mona Lisa that Hiroko told us about?
Indeed I did, said Pellerat. I was with him for 3 hours, and Hiroko did not exaggerate. It was a virtual monologue on his part, and when I left to come to lunch, he clung to me and would not let me go until I promised to return whenever I could, in order that I might listen to him some more.
And did he say anything of interest?
Well, he too, like everybody else, insisted that Earth was thoroughly and murderously radioactive, that the ancestors of the Alphans were the last to leave, and that if they hadn't, they would have died. And Golan, he was so emphatic that I couldn't help believing him. I'm convinced that Earth is dead, and that our entire search is, after all, useless.
79. Trevise sat back in his chair, staring at Pellerat, who was sitting on a narrow cot. Bliss, having risen from where she had been sitting next to Pellerat, looked from one to the other. Finally, Trevise said, Let me be the judge as to whether our search is useless or not, Janoff. Tell me what the garrulous old man had to say to you. In brief, of course.
Pellerat said, I took notes as Mona Lisa spoke. It helped reinforce my role as scholar, but I don't have to refer to them. He was quite stream of consciousness in his speaking. Each thing he said would remind him of something else. But, of course, I have spent my life trying to organize information in the search of the relevant and significant, so that it's second nature for me now to be able to condense a long and incoherent discourse,
Trevise said gently, into something just as long and incoherent. To the point, dear Janoff. Pellerat cleared his throat uneasily.
Yes, certainly, old chap. I'll try to make a connected and chronological tale out of it.
Earth was the original home of humanity and of millions of species of plants and animals. It continued so for countless years until hyperspatial travel was invented. Then the spacer worlds were founded. They broke away from Earth, developed their own cultures, and came to despise and oppress the mother planet. After a couple of centuries of this, Earth managed to regain its freedom, though Mona Lisa did not explain the exact manner in which this was done, and I dared not ask questions, even if he had given me a chance to interrupt, which he did not, for that might merely have sent him into new byways. He did mention a culture hero named Elijah Bailey, but the references were so characteristic of the habit of attributing to one figure the accomplishments of generations
that there was little value in attempting to...
Bliss said,
"Yes, Pell, dear, we understand that part."
Again, Pellerat paused in midstream and reconsidered. "Of course, my apologies." Earth initiated a second wave of settlements, founding many new worlds in a new fashion. The new group of settlers proved more vigorous than the spacers, outpaced them, defeated them, outlasted them, and eventually established the Galactic Empire. During the course of the wars between the settlers and the spacers, no, not wars, for he used the word conflict, being very careful about that, the Earth became radioactive.
Trevius said with clear annoyance, "That's ridiculous, Janoff. How can a world become radioactive? Every world is very slightly radioactive to one degree or another from the moment of formation, and that radioactivity slowly decays. It doesn't become radioactive."
Pellerat shrugged. "I'm only telling you what he said, and he was only telling me what he had heard, from someone who only told him what he had heard, and so on. It's folk history, told and retold over the generations, with who knows what distortions creeping in at each retelling."
"I understand that. But are there no books, documents, ancient histories which have frozen the story at an early time and which could give us something more accurate than the present tale?"
"Actually, I managed to ask that question, and the answer is no. He said vaguely that there were books about it in ancient times, and that they had long ago been lost, but that what he was telling us was what had been in those books."
"Yes, well distorted. It's the same story. In every world we go to, the records of Earth have, in one way or another, disappeared."
"Well, how did he say the radioactivity began on Earth?"
"He didn't in any detail. The closest he came to saying so was that the spacers were responsible. But then I gathered that the spacers were the demons on whom the people of Earth blamed all misfortune. The radioactivity..."
A clear voice overrode him here.
"Bliss, am I a spacer?"
Phelim was standing in the narrow doorway between the two rooms, hair tousled, and the nightgown she was wearing, designed to fit Bliss's more ample proportions, having slid off one shoulder to reveal an undeveloped breast.
Bliss said, "We worry about eavesdropping outside, and we forget the one inside."
"Now, Phelim, why do you say that?"
She rose and walked toward the youngster. Phelim said,
"I don't have what they have."
She pointed at the two men.
"Or what you have, Bliss. I'm different. Is that because I'm a spacer?"
"You are, Phelim," said Bliss soothingly. "But little differences don't matter. Come back to bed."